Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. Today, our show is all about La Mesa, my hometown. We'll have an exclusive interview with La Mesa's mayor, Art Madrid, who's been leading La Mesa for over a quarter of a century and recently ushered in the city's centennial. We'll take a look back and look forward to the city's future. Plus, Mayor Madrid will be making a big announcement on our show today. Stay tuned also for our very special presentation of Centennial Spirits, a radio drama written especially for our show, taking you back in time to La Mesa just over 100 years ago, and presented by the East County Magazine Players. So stay tuned, and we hope you'll enjoy today's programming. Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery. We have decided to reach out to our East County mayors and invite them to come in and talk about their cities, how things have changed, what the challenges are, and what we can look forward to in the future. So I'm very honored today to have as my special guest Mayor Art Madrid from La Mesa. Art, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Now, Art, you've been mayor for 24 years. You were on the city council for 10 years before that. I think since I was a kid, that's going back a long time. What are some of the biggest changes that you've seen in La Mesa through the years and some of the biggest initiatives that you've been involved in?
Well, La Mesa is designated by some people as a bedroom community, and we do have a number of other civic and business organizations that contribute to the economy. One of the biggest employers is the Grossmont Hospital.
Right.
And of course, we have the Grossmont Shopping Center, which employs a lot of individuals. And then local government, we have the school district for the La Mesa Spring Valley and then the city, and then other agencies as well.
Now, you've been called America's Green Mayor. I remember you were the first mayor in our county, at least, to sign the U.S. Mayor's Climate Change Pledge. Tell us a little bit about some of the things La Mesa has done to be sustainable.
One of the things that you have to do, if you happen to be a policymaker and you're in a position of responsibility, you have to look into the future to see just exactly how we can make our community better for those following us.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, environmental issues are significant issues in this community. And so to that end, one of the things we try to do is address the issues that we have some influence and some control over, like walkability.
Right.
And then the other thing, too, is address the issues of recreational activities and enhancing some physical activity by both young people and seniors.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned Grossmont Center. I understand that lease is coming up pretty soon. Looking in your crystal ball, what are some of the things that might happen with that major property there, Art?
As I understand, the lease will be up in another 18 months and revert back to the property owners, which is part of the Cushman family.
Mm-hmm.
We had a conversation with the Cushman family about 3 years ago in terms of what their vision was for the center. And obviously, it is a significant asset for the city, but also for the owners. And there's no doubt in my mind that there will be some revitalization. For example, there are a lot of brick-and-mortar stores, but they'll probably bring in, my sense is that they'll probably bring in some business offices,
mm-hmm.
and probably maybe even some lodging facilities, some homes and some condos.
So are we looking at maybe it becoming a multi-story shopping center with some mixed-use business or residential up above?
All those are possible. There is a significant opportunity for them to bring in some different things that they haven't done. That is a significant asset for the community and also for the property owner. So they're going to obviously explore what's the best way and the highest and best use of that area.
La Mesa just celebrated its centennial. It's 100 years old as of last year, I understand. But I'm wondering, looking in your crystal ball for the next 100 years, or at least the next few years, what are some of the things that you would like to see happen, Art?
One of the things that we have to address are the issues of how can we go ahead and make the community safer,
mm-hmm.
because it's already a very safe community. The other thing we want to do is protect the historical aspects and the culture of the community. And by that, I mean, I personally would not like to see a significant number of changes in the
height.
I guess the height of, mm-hmm. of our community, that we certainly have to evaluate everything that takes place, but it's keeping within the theme of addressing the issue, because this city belongs to the residents. Mm-hmm. There's 60,000 people in La Mesa, and as council members, all we really are stewards of their property.
Correct. So the downtown, keeping the character of the downtown historic district, for example, is something that you would consider an important value.
It's critical. One of the things we're doing in that regard, Miriam, we're going to be investing $5 million in upgrading five blocks of the village, which is really the iconic location for us. And we're going to be replacing all of the hardscape, sidewalks, streets, sidewalks, and curbs.
Wow.
And replacing all the trees, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and also providing some new lighting. And all those things will really make it a great, great site to visit.
Well, that's very nice. Now, in recent years, we've had some new members on the council, and we've seen a lot of efforts there of people who've been trying to sort of clip your wings, so to speak. And there's a term limits thing that some of them are trying to put on the ballot. They've tried to do or did do rival State of the City addresses. Instead of having a mayor do the State of the City address this year, they said, well, we want to all do our own State of the City addresses as well. Claiming budget reasons, they took away your travel to the U.S. Mayor's Conference. What's your reaction to some of that, Art? I mean, can you explain to us what the benefits are of going to something like the U.S. Mayor's Conference, for example?
Well, my initial reaction to their reason for taking all these actions, it's really mm-hmm. pettiness, if you will. In the political arena, there are a number of individuals who work collaboratively together, mm-hmm. and then there are those individuals who are, I guess, professionally envious of what one council member may do that other people aren't doing.
Yeah, some of these people have indicated a possible interest in running for mayor, so there's certainly some political undertones to this, do you believe?
Without a doubt. One of the things that I want to assure them, and I've told everybody, and I'm ready to declare my official candidacy sometime in the next 30 days.
Well, there you go. You heard it here first on the East County Magazine show.
Absolutely.
Congratulations.
I am going to run for a re-election, and there are several goals and platform items I want to achieve in this last term. Every time I run, I have at least four platform items that we've always achieved, including, as I'm sure if you drive through La Mesa, you can see all the new public facilities that we have.
Yes, beautiful.
That was one
buildings.
Of our missions and our goals, and we've achieved it.
What are your goals for the next election then?
One of the things that we have to look at is the city at our Civic Center complex. Mm-hmm. We have three major pieces of property that are vacant. And I think working with the private sector, public sector collaborations, we have an opportunity to go ahead and have that property developed where the city will benefit financially, if you will,
mm-hmm.
by the same token, having mixed use.
And which
having,
property is this? Is
well,
where
the old post office used to be, that whole area on Nebo, that's
right.
One of them. We also have the old police station, that's vacant.
What would you like to see on those lots, Art?
I think something that would contribute to the sales tax base. One of the properties that was being explored was that there was a developer who wanted to come in with some condominiums on top and business stores at the bottom at the old police station. And then tragically, we had that economic recession that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And so funding for virtually every development that we had in La Mesa, and we had about six of them in the pipeline, it all stopped. So things are beginning to just come out of the doldrums. We're not there yet, but we're just beginning to come out of the doldrums.
So you're seeing the economy turn and the budget situation for La Mesa getting better?
It is. It is. But it's also getting better for developers, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, this in 2013, we had the highest number of building permits issued by the city since 2005.
Well, that's a very promising economic sign. Thanks for sharing that with us. Another thing that was recently brought before council was a proposal that you brought forward to restrict e-cigarettes, and the council actually voted that down, or at least decided to study it some more, whereas a number of other cities around the county are taking action, as have a couple of the major campuses locally. Why did you want to restrict the e-cigarettes, and is that something that you think may yet happen in the future, Art?
I'm hopeful that it will. One of the things that happens, as I mentioned earlier, the city council is a steward for the community, and this matter was brought to my attention by at least four individuals that their grandchildren or friends or neighbors were being sold e-cigarettes, and they were either junior high or high school students.
Mm-hmm.
And since there are no rules or guidelines at this point, obviously it should be you cannot sell tobacco products to anybody under 18. But it's now being sold to virtually everybody, and they're promoting it as if it were a fad. Young people like to be part of a community that's in breaking a trend. So when I brought it to my council colleagues, it was really a no-brainer. We have an existing ordinance dealing with tobacco mm-hmm. product, where it can and cannot be used.
Yeah, and many of these do contain tobacco. They contain nicotine, and there's secondhand smoke issues. And actually, one of the disturbing things we found when we interviewed CASA, Communities Against Substance Abuse, on this, is that they are marketing these directly to children with flavors like bubblegum and, you know, Hello Kitty symbols. And they're even putting them into things that look like stuff you'd see in the schools, like marker pens and asthma inhalers. And we heard testimony at the El Cajon Council from students who said that kids are smoking these things right in class in middle school without the teachers realizing what was going on.
Well, you know what's interesting about that, an extension of your comments there? Mm-hmm. We had a speaker at the last council meeting mm-hmm. who came to us and said he was having dinner in a restaurant mm-hmm. with his two children. And right behind him, two of the customers sitting at a table where food was being served, they lit up their e-cigarettes.
Interesting.
And I'm hopeful that the council will eventually do something, but it's like anything else. You want to thwart things if it's it has political connotations. The issues that I bring up before the council are because they're relevant to the needs of the community, whether it's public safety,
right.
tobacco, or if it's the environment, anything like that.
Now, I'm curious, two of the things that they've done to sort of rein in your power, so to speak, was to take away your ability to go to the U.S. Mayor's Conference, at least unless you pay for it yourself, I guess. And also they changed around the SANDAG assignment, San Diego Association of Governments, and reassigned that to someone else so that you're not the representative. But I'm curious, what are the ramifications of that? Can you give some examples of what you feel the benefits of the U.S. Mayor's Conference is? And also, is there a benefit to having someone with seniority on SANDAG as opposed to, you know, the new kid on the block?
Well, let me respond by saying that one of the most successful programs that we have now are Safe Route to Schools. And it was at a U.S. Conference of Mayors that I got exposed to the fact of the matter that this program existed mm-hmm. nationally and throughout the states. And I approached the prime speaker, the keynote speaker for the Safe Route to Schools, and he saw on my name tag that I was from California. And I said, could you explain more about this program? And he said, your state, California, has so much money on this Safe Route to Schools you guys ought to have explored.
Wow.
So I have to defer to the staff on virtually everything. We are out there scanning the environment as elected officials and then bringing that information to staff and do an excellent job in research. And since then, we have received over $3.5 million from Caltrans in grants.
Grants.
Absolutely.
So there's a direct financial benefit
absolutely.
To sending you there. And what is it? It can't cost that much for airfare or hotel to go there. So what?
You know, the total cost primarily for a trip, depending on the distance, is usually about $1,200 because it has a registration fee, which is rather high, and then lodging mm-hmm. for two or three nights, and then the airfare. So the average is about $1,200, $1,300. But we have picked up over $11 million in grants from attending these kinds of conferences.
Very impressive.
Former Councilman Dave Allen and I were the only ones that would attend these conferences,
mm-hmm.
and we were being criticized because they thought it was boondoggles. But we have documented evidence, and staff can prove that it generated millions of dollars in grants by going out there and applying for this information that we would not have known had it not been for attending these conferences.
Back to SANDAG for a minute. What are the benefits of having someone with seniority on SANDAG versus the benefit of having some new blood on there?
I think the benefit of having new blood is beneficial, but they should really become conversant with the operations and knowledge about that.
Mm-hmm.
The current primary representative has barely been on the council for 1 year. Christine Alicio.
The newest member.
It was just an appointment, a political appointment for lack of a better word. But what happens is that if you don't know how to address certain issues, or if you don't know the various programs and projects that are coming before SANDAG for decision-making or for approval, then there's a process of approving and working with 18 other elected officials, mm-hmm. if you will, mostly mayors. And so to that end, it's establishing a relationship. And I've had relationships with my colleagues for the last 30 years, 35 years.
Does it affect committee assignments?
It does. It does. And although Christine is saying that she's been assigned to a lot of these committees, but the reality is, what kind of basis and information and knowledge do you bring to that, besides asking all kinds of questions that have probably been very relevant and very discussed in previous kinds of discussions? You know?
It should be noted that SANDAG is facing a lawsuit right now filed by Sierra Club and I believe Cleveland National Forest Foundation over its regional transportation plan. And you were actually one of the ones who was on the other side of that coin, saying there were some problems with that plan, I understand. The lawsuit argues that it's upside down, that it puts too much emphasis on building more freeways and less emphasis on more mass transit and things. What are your feelings on that?
I still believe what my opposition to the to that particular proposal from Sandag. Mm-hmm. What we have to do is take into consideration what are the long-term ramifications. You know, it's a proven fact that building more freeways is not going to take cars off the road.
Right.
We have to focus on public transit. We're going to be spending $2 million to extend the trolley from Old Town to UCSD and to the Veterans Hospital and around the La Jolla area. But that's an issue that you have to be well versed as what's taking place in that regard.
So it's, in other words, what happens on Sandag, these decisions of who might be representing the city of La Mesa or other cities for that matter, really have ramifications for all of the residents, all of the taxpayers throughout our entire region.
And it does. And let me just share something with you that what they've done right now at this point is restricted the Sandag representative from taking action because at the last council meeting, Mr. Ewan, one of our council members, received total support that the city council representative on any committee cannot take any action on anything that comes before us until they get permission from the city council to go ahead and approve that issue or telling them how to take a stand on it. That really is, I can't even think the right descriptive word to describe the hamstring, the way you're you know, restricting the activity of our council members, because agenda items from some of these other organizations don't necessarily match the council's actions.
Yeah.
So you're going to be sitting at a meeting with the inability to go ahead and approve something. You appoint people to these committees because you respect their information, their knowledge, and their maturity. Mm-hmm. At this point, everything has to be run through the council to receive its approval. Quite frankly, I don't know what their ramifications are, but if something comes before the committees that I'm sitting on at this point and it's worthy of taking action, I will take action.
There you go. Now, these same folks that are kind of having their eye on the mayor's seat, have made noise about possibly running for mayor themselves, are circulating petitions as we speak, trying to put a term limits measure on the ballot. And by their own admission, the big reason for this is because they think you've served long enough and it's time for somebody else. What would your response be to the term limits effort?
Well, first of all, the public will make a determination how long anybody serves. I've told those members who are pushing this issue, we already have term limits. They're called elections. I have been through 9 of them, and I am pleased and blessed that the public has supported my campaign each and every time, simply because I respond to their needs, and we have a vision, and we make difficult decisions. Mm-hmm. Being in public office is not a love fest. It's not a popularity contest. Sometimes you have to take positions that are in the best interest of the majority. Some of my colleagues want to be loved by virtually everybody, and so therefore decisions are deferred, like we have with other issues
so
we just talked about.
So time being contentious is sort of part of the job.
It is. And so the reality happens to be is that you're there to make a decision in the best interest of all the Masons. We're there to serve.
Now, you mentioned sometimes going around or finding other ways to get something through that you believe is important where the council, for whatever reason, disagrees. One of those examples is the All-American City designation. You put forward a proposal recently for council to apply to be named an All-American City, which sounds pretty good, but the council voted that down. Can you explain why and what you were doing about that?
Well, first of all, to reject any application, you can come up with the most inane excuses in the world. At this point, they said that it was going to cost us too much money.
How much money would it cost?
Probably at the very most $24,000 if, in fact, we were selected. But submitting an application does not guarantee selection. Mm-hmm. The way that operates is anybody, and right now they have about 55 applications from throughout the country. It's mm-hmm. open to all cities. You have 55 applications, and there'll probably be more by the middle of March when you have to submit your application.
So if you're not selected, it's less than that. And then what is the benefit to a city if it is selected for this
Well,
honor?
If you're not selected, Miriam, what happens is that was the end of your application. Mm-hmm. But what they will do is the application will be judged, and they will select 20 of them.
And this year we should add that the criteria is
healthy
cities.
Exactly.
And Mesa has, what are a couple of the honors you've already won for healthy
cities?
Well,
we have won at least 11 honors from national organizations and local organizations as a significant amount of grant monies because we are the leader in addressing childhood obesity and childhood diabetes, mm-hmm. walkability, you know, encouraging kids to go out there and exercise.
So this isn't a long shot, in other words. It seems like you've got a pretty good argument to make.
Yeah, but it's a matter of it was not their idea, therefore it doesn't have any merit. I would be willing to support the same concept if, in fact, they would have brought the idea. It's to the best interest of the city. Mm-hmm. What it really amounts to is having civic and community pride in your city. Their decision, in my opinion, is just the opposite.
Now, despite their decision, you haven't let that slow you down. You've gone out and you've found supporters within the community to help you make this happen. Tell us who you're working with.
Well, right now we have about five or six individuals who are important community leaders who are willing to go ahead as individuals support that. Mm-hmm. We also have Fair Trade Organization, which is an organization, a national organization, but headquartered here in La Mesa.
Right.
La Mesa was the first city in San Diego County that supported that.
That was another controversy.
That was another issue.
The board voted it down and you found a way to get the designation anyhow.
But Miriam, let me clear a point. Mm-hmm. It's not finding a way. The organization, the charter and the statute, it's not a charter. The statute mm-hmm. and the guidelines for our city define the responsibilities of a mayor, and I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would certainly like to have cooperation, and I would certainly like to have the majority of the council approve something. But if they don't, that's not going to deter me from doing something that, in my opinion, it's in the interest of the best, the total right. community, and I will do that.
So for the All-American City, I understand that you're working with the Interfaith Council, which
yes.
is church leaders. Who else?
Well, we're working with them. I mentioned the Fair Trade. I've got meetings with three community service organizations, and we're going to promote this with other organizations as well. So
it won't cost the city any money if this is successful.
Exactly. We will find the way from other sources to go ahead and take the team back to Denver, Colorado, if in fact we're fortunate enough, and I'm very confident that we, because of what we're doing, would be one of the 20 selected organizations, and out of those 20, they select 10 to be designated the All-America City, which is a very prestigious kind of an award.
Well, yeah, what does that mean exactly? What will the benefit be to La Mesa if you're selected the All-American City, Art?
There are no economic benefits. We don't get any money. However, it's the intangibles that really count. I've talked to a number of other leaders throughout the country who have been designated All-America City, and what happens is that they have civic leaders, business organizations, and commercial activities like to socialize with those cities who have a vision. And being designated an All-America City, knowing that it's competitive and you have to run through all those hoops, indicates to those people that this city really is in the forefront. They have a vision, they're doing some good things, and we're going to be successful.
Well, very good. Well, congratulations on that effort, Art. Going forward, I'm kind of curious whether you have an overall guiding philosophy that helps you through these challenges that you've faced and, you know, looking forward to the future.
Well, one of the things I constantly remind myself as an elected official is that we were elected and trusted by the public to do what's in the best interest of their community. The other guiding principle that I have, especially in this particular case, is a quote that I'm going to paraphrase to the best of my ability from Margaret Mead, who says, "It only takes a handful of people to change the world, for indeed that's all that's ever happened."
Well, very good. Art, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. Today, we're bringing you something special, an original radio script titled Newsflash Spirits of the Centennial. The presentation commemorates the 100th anniversary of La Mesa, my hometown. Some things have changed a lot in the century since La Mesa became a city, and surprisingly, a lot of things are much the same. Taxes, border security, water shortages, women's rights, war, protesters occupying downtown. These are all recent headlines, and they were also issues back in 1911 and 1912 when La Mesa's dreams of cityhood began and citizens organized to make that dream come true. Now, as a news editor, I wondered what it was like to report the news back in those days. What was happening in La Mesa and our region? What were communications and transportation like? How tough was it to get news about major events nationally or around the world? Our journalism interns today find it mind-boggling to imagine digging out news stories with no internet,
no smartphones, no Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter. Back in 1911, when our story opens, La Mesa had a telegraph, and phone service had just recently arrived. Automobiles were recent inventions. But no highways had yet been built to Arizona or points to the east. The railway didn't connect through to the east yet either, though La Mesa did have a train station for folks heading to San Diego or points north. So news editors still relied largely on old-fashioned word of mouth and first-hand experiences to gather news. For our Centennial Spirits presentation, we start by conjuring up the spirit of La Mesa's first newspaper editor, Wiley Magruder. Now, for those who think developers owning the media is something invented by Doug Manchester and the UT San Diego, think again. Wiley's father, a real estate developer, helped start up the La Mesa Scout newspaper back in 1907 and put his 16-year-old son, Wiley, in charge. The publisher and printer was Wiley's 15-year-old friend, Henry Oliver, who also appears in our production. By 1911, as our story opens, young Wiley, at the ripe old age of 20, had a thriving readership in the little town that was then known as La Mesa Springs, writing glowing descriptions of real estate opportunities and the town's attractions. But times were changing, and Wiley soon found himself amid some major breaking news stories. I hope you'll enjoy our presentation of Centennial Spirits News Flash, presented by the East County Magazine Players with help from the Kronos Theater Group. So without further ado, we begin our presentation with the dateline of January 1911, in the office of the La Mesa Scout, where editor Wiley Magruder is hard at work typing up today's top news story.
Dateline, January 1911. With good social organizations, no saloons, no gambling dens, this community offers one of the finest places in the world for a happy home. Morning, Henry. What's new?
Big news. Father and I just returned from a motor trip to San Diego. A fellow there, Glenn Hammond Curtis, has made the first successful flight with a contraption he calls a seaplane, right off Coronado.
Seaplane? What's it do? Fly under sea?
No, but it can land on the water. And there's more. Curtis announced he's going to start up a flying school called North Island Aviation Camp. And he's inviting the Army and the Navy to send officers there for free pilot training.
Crank up the presses. The Navy coming to San Diego. Now that's a mighty interesting news. Say, do you think it will have much impact on our region's economy? Dateline, April 1911.
Attention, young man.
Yes, sir, Colonel Fletcher. How are things going in that artist colony you and Mr. Gross, the Broadway director, started up on the Grossmont Knoll?
Did you have to call my roadway to the top of the mountain Freaky Fletcher's Fancy Flight?
Just trying to sell newspapers, sir. Is it true you've got a famous...
Never mind, Madam Hank. There are 1,200 U.S. Army troops outside marching right down Lookout Avenue into the heart of La Mesa Springs.
What?
Go look outside and see for yourself.
My gosh, there's a whole parade of officers. But what?
They're leading two infantry regiments armed with rifles and sidearms. They're here to protect East County from the rebel violence down in Mexico.
The Mexican Revolution. I heard some of the Mexican workers over at San Diego Consolidated Gas and Electric just headed off to join the revolutionaries.
The revolution started in Baja and it's spreading north. There's fighting in Tecate and even Tijuana. We can't risk that violence spreading across the border, so I arranged for those troops to come here and camp at Grossmont Pass, conduct some war games, and protect East County.
Good thing our town is in safe hands. Hats off to Colonel Ed Fletcher. Manuel, you look like you've been riding hard. Is something wrong out at the ranch in Steel Canyon?
See, there's trouble, but not at the ranch. Out on the railway. Mr. Steele, he wants me to tell you the news. The stagecoach driver coming from Yuma, he told us when he stopped to change his horse at the ranch. Heard it at the Campbell Stagecoach Station.
What happened?
One of the men working to build a rail line out in the Carrizo Gorge, he saw it all. Terrible.
Did those Mexican revolutionaries attack the rail line again?
Si, senor. Then they rounded up the work crew, took them all captive to fight with Pancho Villa, except one, who hid out in the rocks and got away. Gracias a Dios.
No wonder they're calling that line the Impossible Railway. Dateline, July
1911. Outside is terrible.
Nice music, Madam Hank.
Guten Tag.
Fire! Fire! Where, Henry?
La Mesa Hotel at Lookout and Palm. The whole block of wooden buildings can go up.
Sorry, Mrs. Hank. Duty calls. I've got the fire to cover.
My, but it seems I have come at an inopportune time. Young man, Henry, the scout simply must write something about the exquisite buildings they're going to build in Balboa Park Canyon for the Panama California Exposition. Why, they remind me of the glorious opera houses of Europe.
Tell me more.
I traveled to San Diego to see the Paris Ballet. Shocking. Do you know their costumes bared their ankles?
Oh.
I visited a dear friend and attended the groundbreaking. We saw the drawings for Balboa Park. Yeah, magnificent. Spanish Revival architecture. Though they say the buildings are only temporary. They won't last long.
Well, you're back. What happened?
Our volunteer firefighters are heroes. They hauled the chemical wagon out and held the fire to just the hotel's office.
Thank goodness.
Fire is, and always will be, the greatest threat to our region. Dateline, August 1911.
Look, it's Helen Dwan, the movie director. What a fancy motor car he's driving, all decked out in those leather driving goggles. He best be careful, though, to not get that dandy scarf caught in the wheel spokes.
Morning, Mr. Dwan. Congratulations. I hear that today's the big day you're opening up the Flying A movie studio down the street.
That we are, young man. We've got us a studio and a lot for shooting, and there are great places for filming on locations. Lakeside, Akumba, all that wide-open countryside. Say, you should write something up on Bronco Billy here. He's one of our stars.
Howdy! Yeehaw!
Pleased to meet you, Bronco.
Mr. Dwan, how did you get into making motion pictures?
Why, I had a desk job in Chicago. They sent me west to see why a film crew in Los Angeles hadn't sent any film for 2 weeks. Turns out their director was on a drunken bender. I recommended they disband, but the boss wired me back. Congratulations, you're the new director. So I moved the whole crew here.
What brings you here today?
Casting call. Can you put something in that newspaper of yours saying we need extras for a Western coming up? Can you get me some real cowboys?
Of course.
And some saloon girls? Got any of those?
Afraid not. Best try the Stingray in San Diego for those.
And a sweet, innocent-looking young lady to play a rancher's daughter who wins the heart of...
Like her? That sweet little lady who just sashayed in here?
Why, she has the face of an angel. Young lady, I can make you a star.
Are you the man making moving pictures like the one showing in the vaudeville theater down the street? I fear it shall become a den of vice.
Ooh, good thing these are silent pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Miss, I do not own the opera house, though I have had my eye on showing our motion pictures there.
Mr. Dwan's a movie director, ma'am. He's looking for some rising stars.
Oh, my, I see. Mr. Magruder, would you kindly post an ad for our upcoming Temperance Society meeting? It's high time we do something about the evils of the demon drink.
If it wasn't for demon drink, I wouldn't have a career.
Dateline, late August, 1911. Morning, Mr. Park. How's the lumber business and the banking business?
Booming. Now here's some news for you.
Yeah?
A group of local businessmen and concerned citizens have formed the La Mesa Improvement Club to promote La Mesa as a fine place to live and work.
Nice. Now that should be good for the real estate business.
We're making plans for La Mesa to become a city.
Incorporate? Why?
We can't count on a steady water supply from the flume nowadays.
That's right. San Diego Flume got taken back by its English owners. Foreign control. But then Fletcher and Murray bought the whole shebang and renamed it Cuyamaca Water Company. Well, they promised to live up to the contract requirements and provide water to East County customers.
All true. But now they're talking about selling water to the city of San Diego. We can't risk losing local control of our water supply.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we were a city, we could start up our own municipal water department.
Wise move, seems to me.
That's why we're getting ready to start a petition to put it on the ballot.
Do you think it will succeed?
Ah, now there's the problem. Some of these old ranchers out there, they're opposed to the idea. Reverend Hugh Marshall, he's leading the opposition, doesn't want his citrus grove taxed. So we've got to figure some way to get us a few more votes. Got any ideas?
Dateline, September, 1911.
Here comes trouble. Helen Stoddard looks like she's on the warpath.
The Scout needs to publish this! We, the members of the La Mesa Women's Club, join with our sisters in the Women's Christian Temperance Union. We are embarking on a barnstorming tour to win voting rights for women. We're taking our suffragist special automobile tour into the most rural parts of East County. And we are calling on La Mesa City Fathers to pass a resolution urging our state legislator to enact suffrage rights for the ladies of our state.
Votes? Why, that would mean half of La Mesa's population who can't vote now could cast a ballot.
Women deserve a voice. Why, if women had the vote, we could stop child labor, pass liquor laws, regulate the railroads and these so-called public utilities that are ripping up our streets with their gas line installations.
Mrs. Stoddard, you've convinced me. In fact, we're going to publish an editorial. All power of government originates from the people. Direct legislation will be a check upon dishonesty, fraud, and trickery in the legislature. The right of women to vote is as absolute as a man. Dateline, October, 1911.
So, any word, Mr. Magruder, about the election?
It's official, Mrs. Stoddard. The news is just in from California's Secretary of State. It was a close race. Took 2 days to count all the ballots and certify them. By a 1,000-vote margin, the men of California have granted women the right to vote.
Yes! Thank you, young man, for that courageous editorial. No doubt it helped persuade our La Mesa civic leaders to support suffrage for women. I am so proud to live in such a progressive-minded town.
What do you have planned next?
Why, we're organizing a caravan. I have 40 members of the La Mesa Women's Club committed to join me in a journey to the county clerk's office to register to vote on October 19th. Why, just think. Now women can not only vote, we can run for office too. I hereby announce my candidacy for the U.S. Senate. In fact, I may even run for president someday. Why, I'm sure it won't be long until the American people elect a woman to serve in the White House.
What Pandora's box have I opened? Dateline, November 1911. We're here at a town meeting at the Opera House, where supporters and opponents of La Mesa de Cleric Cityhood are circulating petitions for and against. And leading these supporters is Mr. Charles Parkman.
Are you ready for La Mesa to determine our own destiny?
Yes! All right!
Are you ready to help La Mesa have the power to provide its own water supply?
Yes!
Govern our own schools that are overcrowded.
Yes. Yes.
So our children can have a proper public education.
Yes! Yes!
Good!
And on the other side, we have the Reverend Hugh Marshall working to rally his forces.
No new taxes!
No new taxes! No new taxes! No new taxes!
No big government!
No big government! No big government!
We don't need cityhood for La Mesa!
Dateline, January, 1912.
Morning, Mr. Magruder. I need to run an air to find a new boarder in our boarding house.
Pleased to oblige, Mrs. Fellows, and I surely did enjoy that Christmas dinner you served up, worth every penny of the 25 cents it cost.
Oh, thank you. Let's see what's in your newspaper here. My, cooking with gas costs $1.85 a month. I ought to look into buying one of those newfangled gas stoves. Now then, what's the latest on this move to make La Mesa City?
Well, that first petition didn't work out. Supporters got 70 signatures, including 20 women folk who exercised their new right to vote.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
But they forgot to publish their announcement, as the law requires.
Oh.
So last month, the county district attorney declared it null and void.
Oh.
Now, however, they've resubmitted their petition, this time with 97 signatures.
Huh.
The county board of supervisors is meeting today. Reckon we'll hear soon.
Oh.
Recruiter here. Yahoo! Today is a historic day for La Mesa. Supervisors have approved a citizens' incorporation petition and set February 7th as a special election day.
Oh, right!
Dateline, February 1912. Well, Henry, it's official. With 249 votes in favor and only 60 votes against, La Mesa has approved incorporation.
That's great news.
Today, 1 week after that historic election, city trustees have gathered together and elected Dr. Charles Sampson as the first mayor to preside over our fair city.
Dr. Sampson? Bet the good doctor was opposed to cityhood.
True, my friend, but politics make strange bedfellows. Dateline, March 1912. This week's national headlines. The U.S. Post Office has issued the first airmail postage stamp, 9 years after the first aeroplane lifted off at Kitty Hawk. Illusionist Harry Houdini made a miraculous escape from a water tank in New York Harbor. Former President Theodore Teddy Roosevelt has formed a new Bull Moose political party in hopes of taking back the White House. Oh, can I help you, Colonel Fletcher?
I just came back from San Diego. Went there to pick up some more trees to plant up at Grossmont Colony. You won't believe what's happening downtown. Those labor agitators, the Wobblies.
International Workers of the World, IWW.
Anarchists and socialists. About 5,000 of them. Why, they're occupying the streets of downtown.
Unbelievable. What do they want?
They're protesting the city's new free speech ordinance, which actually outlaws speeches in public places around City Hall, though it clearly hasn't worked. The leader of the anarchists herself, Emma Goldman, showed up and gave a radical speech. Radical. I'm telling you, why, she not only demanded more rights for workers, she was openly advocating to legalize birth control for women.
Scandalous! Then what happened?
It got ugly. Some of the fine upstanding citizens of San Diego abducted Miss Goldman's paramour, Ben Reitman, tarred and feathered that scoundrel and branded IWW on his bare backside.
Oh, ouch, that must have hurt.
The anarchists fought back, and there was an all-out riot. Police used fire hoses on the rioters, and now the protesters are complaining about police brutality.
Thanks for the tip, Colonel Fletcher. Let's hope nothing like that ever happens in San Diego again. Dateline, April 1912. The past of La Mesa has laid a strong foundation for the future.
Madam Schumann-Heinck, what's wrong?
Mein Gott, have you heard?
What's happened?
I just came from the telegraph office. A terrible tragedy. The British ocean liner, the Titanic, struck an iceberg and has sunk.
Oh, my.
My dear companion, Lady Astor, was on board along with her husband.
Oh.
I must learn their fates.
That's terrible.
I'll call.
Wiley, you said it would be my turn to cover the next big story. I'll call New York on your new telephone.
Operator.
New York Times.
News desk.
May I speak with the reporter, please, miss?
Sir, I am a reporter.
Women in the newsroom? My, times are changing. Henry Oliver here, a reporter in California. Any word on survivors of the Titanic disaster?
Oh, it was a terrible story. There are 1,500 believed lost out of over 2,200 on board.
Any names? What about the Astors?
Oh, and the Astors, oh, they acted quite nobly. Lady Astor was on deck, just 19 and expecting with child. A witness saw Lady Astor give up her shawl to wrap around an immigrant's baby in the icy cold night. The child, tossed into a lifeboat, was caught by a woman below and survived.
Did Mrs. Astor survive? What about her husband?
Oh, and Mr. Astor? He ordered a servant to fetch Madeline's fur coat and had her wear her finest jewels. Oh, then he lifted her onto a lifeboat. The sea is calm and you will be all right, he assured her. You are in good hands, and I will meet you in the morning. But he never saw the dawn.
Oh, that's dreadful news.
He was a hero to the end. He helped two frightened immigrant children onto the lifeboats, then went to the ship's kennel to free the dogs. The last that Lady Astor saw of him, he was strolling across the deck with his beloved Airedale dog, Kitty, at his side.
And Mrs. Astor?
Her health was frail. She had a nurse on board. Yet she mustered her strength on the lifeboat, rowing and bailing out water. Why, she even helped to pull drowning men from the water, saving lives.
My God.
So she survived. What a remarkable woman.
Oh, and there's more big news this week. Arizona and New Mexico have been admitted to the Union. The first woman flew solo across the English Channel, and some British explorers just reached the South Pole. How's that?
Amazing. Thank you for sharing those news flashes. One thing about a tragedy like this, it should mean a safety overhaul for the industry. Why, I'll bet we'll never again see the day when a major ship goes down without enough lifeboats for all. Madam Schumann-Heinck, please accept my condolences on your loss. Say, isn't that the song they were playing when the Titanic was sinking? You should record that. I'll bet it would be a big hit.
Dateline, October 1912.
So, Wiley,
How are you liking the book you're reading, Riders of the Purple Sage? Well, would you look at that? Our own Western writer, Owen Lister, just walked in. I'm going over to the telegraph office to see what's new.
Morning, Mr. Lister.
How do you fellas like that new Western writer, Zane Grey?
Oh, he spins a fine tale, Mr. Lister, but then so do you. The Virginian you wrote is still my favorite. How's that new home you're building up the Grossmont Colony coming along?
Mighty fine. Say, do you have any news on how the Bull Moose campaign's shaping up for my good friend Teddy Roosevelt? Sounds like quite a matchup with Taft and Woodrow Wilson both in the race.
The former president is a friend of yours? How do you know him?
Oh, we go way back. Used to go camping together up in Yosemite, along with a fellow by the name of John Muir. Heard he's writing a book, too.
Stop the presses! Just came over the wire down at the telegraph office. Teddy Roosevelt has been shot.
Shot?
In Milwaukee. And wait till you hear what happened. He was outside the hotel because of his big speech when a saloon keeper ran up with a gun and shot him right in the chest. Roosevelt looked dazed, patted his breast pocket, then ascended onto the platform where he unbuttoned his overcoat and vest to reveal a blood-stained shirt. He pulls out a bloody-stained, folded-up paper. Not even a bullet could stop the Bull Moose, who went on to begin his speech.
And he said, I don't know the man who shot me tonight. He shot to kill me. Now I wish to say seriously to the speakers and newspapers representing the Republicans and Democratic and Socialist parties that they cannot, month in and month out, make the kind of slanderous, bitter, and malevolent assaults that they have made, and not expect that brutal and violent characters will be unaffected by it. Don't you pity me. I'm all right. And you cannot escape listening to my speech either. I ask you to look at our declaration and read our platform about social and industrial justice, and then, friends, vote for the progressive ticket.
So after his speech, they took him to the hospital, where the doctor said it was only a flesh wound. Good thing his eyesight was so poor. He had to write his speech in big print and use lots of paper.
Dateline, November 1912. Months without rain has worsened the drought, adding to the woes facing East County cattle ranchers. Mexican fever has stricken herds south of the border, leading local cattlemen to build a border fence to keep out those invaders from the south, cows and bulls.
Is it true you run classified ads in this here paper?
Yes, ma'am, we do.
Sugar, I need to find me some work.
What line of work are you in, Miss...
Delilah. I reckon you can say I specialize in services for gentlemen.
Oh.
Need a room to rent, too. You got any boarding houses in this little town?
Mary Fellows runs one, but I don't think it's the kind of place you're looking for.
Oh, dear.
Oh, why, Mrs. Stoddard, what brings you here today?
What's that fallen woman doing here?
The name's Delilah, ma'am.
She's one of those sporting women who were rounded up by San Diego police when they raided the Stingaree District last night. It was quite a scandal. Some of San Diego's most upstanding city officials were among the clientele.
Definitely upstanding.
Oh, for goodness sake, I hear they caught the chief of police and the mayor in compromising positions.
Oh, what's your source, Mrs. Stoddard?
Our temperance ladies have been active participants on the city's vice suppression committee. The police arrested 138 of these women last night, gave them the choice to accept help from our group to reform or leave town. 137 of them hightailed it out of here, presumably back to their lives of sin.
How many men were arrested?
None.
Now, Miss Delilah, go on, get out of here. We have no houses of ill repute or saloons in La Mesa. Go try alcohol.
Thank you kindly. You ever need some help getting to the bottom of a story, Mr. News Editor, you come and see me.
Dateline, November 12th, 1912.
Howdy, boys. Taking a break from working your claims out at the Chase Mine?
Tarnation! Can you believe what just happened in El Cajon?
Oh, what happened?
They voted to incorporate
El Cajon, a city too?
They done made it illegal to own hogs or cattle in the city limits.
Oh, how awful.
And now first thing they done is to legislate morality.
How?
They banned horse racing down Main Street.
At least it'll be cleaner.
And now they're fixing to outlaw drinking liquor.
Now wait a minute, that's going too far.
Where's a hard-working man supposed to wet his whistle when they close down all the saloons?
What is East County coming to?
This concludes our special production of Centennial Spirits. We thank the members of the East County Magazine Players, including representatives from Kronos Theater Group and the Faultline Players, our talented cast, Ted Faligan, Celeste Innocente, Raina Menashe, Eric George Tauber, Jackie Tauber, Leon Thompson, and Jeff Thurman. We also acknowledge music and sound effects from the U.S. Army Band, PDMusic.org, Sound Bible, Wildcat, Foley, Soundlay, and Burke. The script for Centennial Spirits was written by Miriam Raftery, directed by Raina Menashe, and produced by the East County Magazine Show and our parent nonprofit, the Heartland Coalition, on KNSJ Radio, 89.1 FM, Descanso. We also gratefully acknowledge our studio host, the San Diego Performance Academy. If you would like to underwrite future dramatic interpretations of East County history by the East County Magazine Players, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call us at 619-698-7617. We hope you've enjoyed this special production of Centennial Spirits. The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio.